lost in heaven, my guardian angel.
Pledge to our flag, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call, please?
Thank you. Commissioner Daniels?
Present.
Commissioner Sheeler?
Present.
Commissioner Solomon?
Here.
Vice Chair West?
Here.
Chair Wallace?
Here. We start with a public forum, which is an opportunity for anyone to address us on matters within our jurisdiction, but not on this evening's agenda. I think we have no speakers on that, so we can go ahead. So let me ask if there are any amendments or adjustments to our agenda.
Good evening, Madam Chairman, members of the Commission. We'd just like to point out that item C2, Willow Springs 2, revision of conditions of approval, that item is being continued to the January 7th meeting. We just put it on here as a courtesy to make sure anybody was thinking of attending. And also, just for the record, that we are holding a meeting, a special meeting technically, on January 7th, and the January 14th meeting is canceled. So same number of meetings, just a week earlier.
Spreads them out a little bit?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our first item is on the administrative agenda, and it's the introduction of our new planning and environmental review director, Jennifer Carman. Mr. Singer, our city manager.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. Jennifer, actually, why don't you come and join me up here? It's my great pleasure to introduce our newest addition to City Hall, Jennifer Carman, who joins us as the new Planning and Environmental Review Director, as the chair noted. As I was taking Jennifer around the offices and introducing her this morning, I think we must have come across at least five or six employees that are only maybe a month or two old in the city. We've seen a lot of transition and change here. So Jennifer is the newest addition, and a lot of people were excited that they're no longer the new kid on the block. But that's not going to last very long, since we're in the process of doing other recruitments, and there'll be more employees joining us in January. I wanted to just say a little word about Jennifer, citing from her resume and her experience. And then I thought it'd be nice for each of you to also introduce yourselves. You'll be seeing a lot more of her over the years, over your tenure here, certainly. Jennifer's a native Californian, growing up kind of in Southern California and then going to school up in Santa Cruz before going on to Georgia Institute of Technology, where she got her master's in planning, and then decided to come back to the West Coast, but started way up north, and she's been slowly migrating south. Let me see if I can get this all correct. Her first planning job was up in the Ketchikan Gateway Boroughs, and then moved down to Seattle, and then after that, Mercer Island, and then most recently in El Cerrito, where she was the planning manager and then promoted to community development manager, community services manager. Where she was for about 10 years before we snatched her away. So you can see she's slowly migrated. And I noticed as I was thinking about those locations, you've always been next to water.
Yes.
So there must be a story there. Well, she told me today at lunch she's an excellent fisherman. So maybe there's a little love of the sea or something. In any event, Jennifer comes to us with a wealth not only of experience, but everyone was incredibly impressed with her during the interviews, which I might say were fairly grueling. As many of you also might know, we had a couple of finalists that all did very well, Ms. Saley being one of those, and has done a fabulous job during this interim time since Steve Chase left, and has agreed to continue not only to help get Jennifer up to speed, but to continue to work with us. So we're really pleased with that. We're getting the best of both worlds in that case. But I want to let Jennifer say a little bit about herself. And then, as I said, I thought it'd be nice for you all to just say a little bit about your background and how long you've been on the commission.
Good evening. I'm very, very happy to be here. I'm very excited about working with all of you and working with the city staff. Like Dan said, I've been in El Cerrito in the Bay Area for the last 10 years, and I'm very happy to be in Goleta. My parents are thrilled that I'm closer to them in Southern California. And I'm looking forward to learning more about Goleta. I feel a very natural fit here, and so I look forward to working with all of you and developing more in the city. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think Mr. Singer has a good idea that we would make some brief introductions of ourselves, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure. I would love to know more about all of you.
Oh, you will. Commissioner West, would you like to go ahead?
I'll start. My name is Meg West, and welcome. We're so glad to have you. I'm the newest member of the Planning Commission. Now it's been 2 years, which, well, I guess technically Brent's sort of the newest, but he was a reappointment. So I am the least experienced member, but finally really feeling at home here. I'm a landscape architect by trade.
Hi, Jennifer. My name is Bill Sheeler, and I've been serving since 2009, and it's been a real privilege and a high point in my life to be able to serve Goleta in this capacity. And I want to welcome you here, and I'm hoping that maybe I'll have an opportunity to sit down with you on more of a one-on-one basis and talk about what's important to me and find out what you're really interested in as well. And I did want to note that I was pleased to see that El Cerrito had an interest in community-supported agriculture, and that may be something that Goleta will be looking forward to as well.
Commissioner Solomon?
Bill, can I also just point out that Bill's recently retired from UCSB,
okay.
So there's a natural connection there, but also is now serving, and congratulations, by the way, as a representative on the Regional Transportation Board, the MTD.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Mr. Solomon?
Thank you, Chair. Jennifer, welcome. We're delighted to have you, and it's wonderful that you're a Californian. I, too, am a Southern California girl. Very fortunate to have your experience here in the community. I've been a part of the Planning Commission for 7 years now. It's a long time. I've been here through the development of the general plan alongside Commissioner Daniels. It's been a tremendous learning curve and an honor to serve. My background is in business. I was in marketing and advertising for about 15 years and have gradually transitioned into community service. Thank you.
Commissioner Daniels.
Welcome, Jennifer. Brent Daniels. I guess I can say I'm a student of planning. Went to UCSB for environmental studies and then Cal Poly for my master's. Be interested to see what type of focus you had on your master's compared to what I did. We can have that conversation later. Let's see. So I've probably been here 6.5 years, you know, with a 14-month sabbatical. There was a previous planning commissioner that left the city, and so there was a void that had to be filled. Anyway, I look forward to working with you and appreciate your abilities to come down here and set us straight. Okay? Thank you.
Well, I want to say welcome. I've been hanging around the city for a number of years in a number of different roles, and I'm really enjoying being a member of the Planning Commission. I think you'll find that planning Goleta is challenging, but really, really rewarding. I think there are a lot of very difficult issues and projects, and I think you have excellent help in all of our staff. Our planning staff is just excellent. And I think you'll find the community united in caring about Goleta and willing to offer a plethora of ideas. So we'll all help you work through those. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're not going to make me do the rest of the resume, are you?
No. We'll have plenty of time.
Okay, because Ms. Wallace was one of our founding council members before joining the Planning Commission after retiring from the council. So
Thank you.
Thank you.
May we clap?
Yeah. You know, before we leave this item, I could wait for the comment section, but I'd like to do it now because it matches up. I think, Ms. Saley, that you have really done an excellent job. We have had some really, really big and difficult projects, and you've gotten us through that, I think, as smoothly as could be done, very smoothly. I think that you've been willing to answer our questions and never afraid to say, I'm not sure, I will check. You've given us the opportunity to submit our questions and get answers for everyone, for our whole community. And I really appreciate the things that you've done. And I'm very glad that you're going to be sticking around the city as I have for many years. Because, you know, transition in our city, things change so rapidly, I'm not sure it's ever quite accomplished. So you're needed, and thank you for staying. Okay, I think now we can move on, and the next item is approval of our minutes, the commission minutes of October 22nd, 2012.
I'll make a motion to approve those minutes, Madam Chair.
All right.
Second.
Okay. Any further comment? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Madam Clerk, that is unanimous. Madam Clerk, would you go ahead now and read for the record item B1?
Item B1 is a presentation by Coastal Housing Coalition, Housing, the Next Frontier, Strategies and Solutions.
Okay. Ms. Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Back in June, the Coastal Housing Coalition, that, if memory serves, have been around about 15 years, put on a one-day symposium at UCSB that was all about housing, and Mark Schneep, who is an economist that I would imagine most of you have heard of and seen presentations, he had done a whole analysis, and it was really fascinating. And that information will be presented tonight with the goal of just education. And also, we have John Campanella with us. He's a board member. He'll make the presentation. But one of the things at the end is talking about an upcoming employee survey, and we thought that you might have some input that could be helpful to really make sure the information that comes out of that is meaningful. So with that, I'll...
Ms. Saley, do we have sort of a time estimate on the item, more or less?
20 minutes? Does that work?
That works for me.
Thank you. Mr. Campanella?
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Chair Wallace, members of the commission and staff. My name is John Campanella. I'm a board member of the Coastal Housing Coalition. And the coalition works with employers on the South Coast trying to address the needs of worker retention due to the high cost of housing. And their role is seeing the needs of employers and providing educational opportunities for the public to understand the importance of housing. Also to support and make comments on policies, as we know, as you go through the general plan process and other policy decisions that are made by the local communities, and also to support those projects that are fulfilling the need as they see it, to produce housing that can be affordable to and provide the housing needed to workers on the South Coast. So that's their mission. And as part of their educational opportunity, they looked at holding this conference to show the results of Mark Schneep's survey that was taken from updated information from the current census of 2010 and trying to, let's say, emphasize some of the things that Mark saw in his report that I think we should all be aware of, not only from a planning standpoint, but also from a community knowledge of what's going on, so that we can have some ideas. We approach things that we can see what really is happening in our community. So this was a major part of the conference that we had, and then we'll cover a few small points where we went into breakout groups for a variety of topics to see how we might come up with some solutions. And there were a variety of speakers. I think there are about 120 people in total. And there were a lot of takeaways that we followed up on from the input that we got from the participants. So what I'd like to look at is what jumps out. We have a, this is a copy of the report that Mark produced, and we can give you contact information to get copies or also get it online. It's the data backup, graphs, et cetera, pictorials, which might be helpful in illustrating. But we just wanted to summarize tonight. What jumps out is that the population continues to increase on the South Coast, but slowly, and it's due primarily to births over deaths, not so much in migration as one might think. The birth rate has been, over the last 20 years, has been slowly declining from about 3,000 births per year on the South Coast to about 2, while deaths have been pretty much constant. So we see a shrinkage, let's say, in the young families that is going on at the same time the population is getting older. People are living longer. It's growing older faster than the rest of California. And one stat that was interesting was the middle-aged households have declined. You think younger people moving out, maybe older people, but middle-age, which are the prime earning years, also has reduced as a percentage of our population. The average age of housing stock, it's getting old too, 42 years old, and that's across the board on the South Coast. I know you have some newer projects than that have taken place and are in process that are, but for the whole South Coast, that's what the age is. Overall, sizes are small. They average 2 bedrooms as opposed to 3 bedrooms plus in the north part of the county. And due to geographic, economic, environmental, and land use policy constraints, there's not a lot of new housing. That's Mark's comment, and I know you know, you're doing a lot to try to fulfill that in your community to get the housing on the ground. It's dearly held. It's the occupied housing, owner-occupied housing is lower than 1980 and significantly lower than the California average. Residents 55 and over nearly own all of the single-family housing stock, owner-occupied or not. And since 2000, ownership rates have fallen for all age groups except in those 65 and over, who are really the primary occupants of the housing. Tenure is longer than in California. 23% of homeowners living in their homes since at least 1980, 38% for more than 22 years. And that's opposed to the city of Santa Barbara, which would be the 93101 code, where renters are, account for 80% of the households. So when you look at fulfilling housing needs, it's an issue on the entire South Coast, but also, as Pat said, looking forward and finding out how we proceed and how we get good information. It's also sub-market based upon the urban, how more urban one part of the South Coast is versus another. So it may not be one size fits all, but where can we fit the needs based on a variety of product types and also locations where people work? Only 14% of 25 to 34-year-olds own their own housing. And since 1980, this percentage has gone down from about 27% every 10 years to about 14%. Of the houses owned are in this quartile, while at the same time the older ages keep have a larger and larger percentage of the housing. Affordability gap has widened, and we talk about affordability gap. It's not just the price of housing, but it's also what are people making? What's the household income? And you really think of it as a numerator and a denominator. You have to be able to afford a house. You have to get the price right, but you also have to get the income right. The better-paying jobs would be able to afford the housing better than not lower-paying jobs. And at the same time, you have to try to reduce the cost of housing by a variety of methods. Real income has declined to just about just above 1990 levels. It's back. It started in 1990. It was $63,000 family income in the South Coast. It's now $65,000, and that's in constant dollars. So we know that there haven't been a lot of salary increases lately because of the recession, but I think, and Mark said, there may be more to it than that. It may be the mix of jobs that we're seeing as well that's keeping those average incomes down. Lower-paying jobs replacing higher-paying jobs on the South Coast, especially as that middle-age quadrant moves away. Real home prices dropped since 2007, but they're still much higher than 1990. I find this to be an interesting graph. It's pretty simple. I came back on a plane and some lady was working with all types of bar graphs for a presentation, and I said, well, look at mine. You know, it's pretty easy to come up with a simple message. But if you look at the California line, what this represents is what is the cost of a median home price compared to the median income that people are earning in this in the state of California. And the price of houses is approximately a little less, over this time, has been about a little less than five times income. So if you're making $30,000 average, let's say the state average is about $65,000. So if you're making if you're making that a $300,000 house is about what you would see statewide. In the South Coast, it's gone from eight times up to over 12 times. So the price of a house has got up to 12 times what annual salary is on average for the South Coast, which just is to illustrate the problem that we have relative to getting people of average income or even somewhat above average income into housing. Question it raises, again, how do we get the price down and also the incomes up to perhaps bend that curve? Because right now it's gone down, but we know that's because of current the recession, and as we come out of it, the prices are going up, and as those prices going up are going to be in advance of actual incomes going up. So we have that issue to deal with. There's a very significant lack of affordable inventory. Interest rates are good, but the underwriting, if you underwriting credit conditions are tighter than usual, more down payment, higher credit scores, asset tests. Whereas refinance has liberalized a little bit in some of the programs initiated by the government to get people to refinance to lower interest rates, for initial loans on new home purchases still are very tough to get. This is an example Mark put together of affordable home listings. Affordability meaning what is the median, what are the number of houses that somebody could afford based on having a median income here on the South Coast. And as you can see over the years, that declined pretty rapidly, almost to nil. Little better now because of the fact that cost of housing came down a bit, but as you've seen lately, that's correcting also. Prices are starting to go up. Now, on the other hand, the other component for our workers is rentals, and the city of Goleta has been very good about putting rental stock on the ground. Many more are needed on the South Coast. The vacancy rate is about is less than 2%. In Santa Barbara, I know it's about 1% right now, which means over the course of a year, on average, a house is vacant, an apartment is vacant 3 to 4 days. So it's like somebody moves out, somebody moves in. That's a very tight market, and as you may know, the product that's available that's vacant sometimes is not really units that you might want to live in. You know, you're talking about a variety of stock. The empty ones may not be the most desirable. Renters in Santa Barbara stay longer in units than the state average as well. Here's a sign of the vacancy. You see how the vacancy has gone down. This is April 12, which was the data that Mark presented. Total South Coast, Coast employment is lower than in 2000. There's a significant amount of employment sectors on the South Coast have relatively low salary levels and have been experiencing employment reductions, and in commuting has increased since 1990. Let me take a second on those. The number of commuters from San Luis Obispo and Ventura counties have doubled in 20 years. That's gone from about 6,000 a day to about 12,000 a day. The number of jobs during that same period of time on the South Coast have increased from 90 to 110. Okay, so a great proportion, a greater proportion of people are coming into from Ventura because of the inability to afford housing than the actual percentage of job growth that would, you know, leads you to believe that it would be consistent, but it's not. Much higher percentage of in-migration for jobs. And the out-commuting from the South Coast has declined. You have handouts, so it might be a little easier to read this, but this is employment by industry. This is the number of jobs that are in public sector down to warehousing and utilities. And you can see a predominance of jobs on the South Coast are in the public sector and leisure. Unfortunately, public sector over the last couple of years has been retracting because of economic situations and cutback in staff and municipalities. Leisure has been growing, but those are low-paying jobs. The higher-paying jobs, let's say in information technology, finance, they're pretty low on the county, and I guess that's just an alert that maybe we should be looking at how to encourage those type of jobs. How do we get higher paying jobs and employers to come to this community so that people can earn more income and have a better chance of affording housing? Again, public sector is the biggest and also is in right now is in contraction. Hopefully we can understand this, but this is on average salary from 10,000 up to 90,000. And so now this has been resorted for the same groups of employment. But you can see professional services has a good salary, information does, but leisure is way down the bottom as far as salaries. And what I did was stick in some numbers. It's numbers 1 through 12, which represent how these salaries are reflected by the number of jobs that we have, the graph we just saw before. So you see that professional services, information, manufacturing, finance, wholesale trade, in total are higher paying jobs because of the salary. But as far as the percentage of those jobs and the number of the jobs, they're down the bottom when you look at the number of jobs that there actually are. So, and leisure.
Excuse me, John.
Yeah.
Would you once again explain the numbers that are in bold? I'm not
right.
Sure I followed that.
What I did, so I didn't have to flip back and forth. Okay. The red numbers, if you take the same trades and you go back to the number of jobs that are in the community, ranking number one, let's say, is the most. Thank you for the question. Number one is the highest number of jobs. Number two, number 12 would be the least jobs. I superimpose them on the salaries bars. So you can see that where the salary is the greatest, some of them represented would be lower number of jobs that actually exist. So, for example, in the information services, high tech, those are good paying jobs, but they rank 9th out of 12th. An absolute number of jobs in the county. So, again, to illustrate, how do we get some more better-paying jobs to be part of the mix?
Thank you.
Thank you. There's leisure. If older residents do not have affordable housing options, they'll stay in place and underutilize the constrained available housing stock. So even without job growth and the need for housing for job growth, the mere fact that older people, like myself, are retiring in place, are taking houses off the market. So for workers, it's not that you need housing for necessarily for job growth, but just to get workers in that are replacing the ones that are retiring. Now, when the economy turns around and we want some better paying jobs, you're going to have two of those factors that you have to try to help ameliorate, and that's older people retiring in place and new jobs created. Middle class and younger residents will move where they can get appropriate housing or will commute to jobs on the South Coast. Increased commuting will further degrade the environment, community cohesion, and the quality of work life. Without ownership options, additional pressure will be put on existing rental housing, which we see is also impacted with very low rates today, causing even lower vacancy rates and rising rents. The lack of housing options will diminish the available workforce, especially from the shrinking middle-aged cohort, and could contribute to diminished response effectiveness for health and safety workers. Existing businesses may have difficulty replacing retirees in the aging workforce. Now, what happens on the commercial side? The economic side and the economic vitality, we may see challenging changes to the consumer base as people with the higher incomes move away. Businesses may leave the area, decide not to locate here, because desirable employees cannot be retained or attracted to the lack of housing opportunities. So what do we do? And part of the conference was to come up, we had six different groups on how to, for example, how do we finance infrastructure and affordable housing now that we have no redevelopment agencies anymore? How do we do, how can we get some more compact development, mixed use, et cetera? And we had various breakout sessions where panels gave their thoughts. We had Q&A. And then at the end of the day, we try to come up with what have we learned and what would we like to see more of in the future? What more information do we need and should we get out to the public in order to properly make decisions? So we need housing development designed to give seniors affordable and comfortable alternatives as opposed to remaining in their single-family homes, you know, free up that housing stock for families. Increased apartment development, which you are doing, attractive and affordable to the middle income and middle class. Employee-sponsored housing development, similar to what Cottage Hospital has done and also Westmont. There was a program, East Beach Collection in Santa Barbara that was intended for workforce as well. So we had a seminar on that. The city of Santa Barbara also in their housing element has included a provision for higher density if we can come up with employer-sponsored housing. there's an overlay that would go up to 63 units per acre, for example, and this is either for rental or employer-sponsored housing, that we know that the units are going to go to people that are working here. And that's going to be tested during the next 5 to 8 years under the general plan to see if we can pull that off. Compact development, transit-oriented development, limited equity housing cooperatives, which you may have heard of, where it's a co-op, it's ownership, but essentially you're investing an ownership position within the co-op itself. It's much less, lower down payment. There's one mortgage that covers the entire property. So it's sort of like a rental, if you will, but with ownership advantages, including tax advantages. And creative financing partnerships to provide accessible mortgages for people. And that's Silent Seconds and others. But I'd like to add on to that is creative partnerships to finance infrastructure as well, you know, to be able to develop sites, because the cities don't have the redevelopment money like you have to, like you had before. So it's public-private partnerships in order to try to get infrastructure in so we can build and we can redevelop without redevelopment agencies, that there's incentives for private investment to come in and redevelop or rehab older properties and convert those into a good portion of those into residential use. Okay, what are we doing? Well, we spoke about education, advocating for projects, but also, hopefully, some of the results of the survey can be utilized by others. The Workforce Investment Board, which is a nonprofit, private and public partnership operated by the county, they did their own survey back in May, and this was on the technology jobs, new jobs, what type of jobs, what's the changing jobs, and how do we prepare people to be trained for the future, to be ready for those jobs. They did that study. They looked at various job clusters throughout the county. How can you add to some synergy that's already there and expand that employment base? What they're going to be doing this spring is taking the results of our study on the housing needs and their study on the job needs and combining it into one conference. And this will be done on the North County, South County, and I think also in the San Ynez Valley. They're going to employ both consultants who wrote the two reports and try to integrate them, okay? Not just talking about housing or jobs, but how do we put both of those together to better the communities? What we're going to do is following that then, which I think is a good segue, we're asked the questions in the city a lot by the city council, is are we going to be producing the housing that people need and people want? You know, we can start thinking about zoning. We can just think about various ways to support housing, whether it be parking requirements or other type modifications that could be made to allow us to get lower priced housing. But are we going to be producing the housing that people want? That's the purpose of the report. And I'll be working on that with several others on the board. And well, we're going to be looking at what type of housing fits the needs, rental versus ownership, detached, attached, stack flats, road towns, what portion of the population would like these and in what areas, and also number of bedrooms and parking requirements. So if we have a few minutes, since we're starting on this process for this survey, which hopefully is a good segue from the other conferences that have been held, both ours and in Workforce Investment Board, I respectfully ask some input from perhaps what you've been thinking about as you're trying to guide the community in development. And as you've recently gone through the general plan as well, what thoughts you have on how we might conduct this survey, what sources of information there may be that we could use, and most importantly, what you would like to know.
Okay. Thank you. Looks like we have some lights on here. Questions? All right, Bill Light, Ms. Sally.
John, right at the end there, you said there's the employment forecast for Santa Barbara County and then CHCs. Did you say the new conferences, like a South Coast, San Ynez, North County, are happening before the survey happens? You're bringing that information together? Did I hear that correctly?
Well, the Workforce Investment Board is concerned with the entire county, mm-hmm. Okay? We're concerned South Coast. So what we're going to see is what they come up with when they combine it by three different market areas. And they will be making individual, Mark Schneep and their consultant will be making individual presentations to all three geographic areas. And it'll be tailored to that geographic area. You know, Santa Maria Valley, the the San Ynez Valley and ourselves. So we would be concerned, thank you, Pat, for really teeing off, if you will, what their results were for the South Coast and then, you know, incorporating that into our questionnaires and how we think about conducting our study. Next.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Sheeler, you have questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Campanella, for this presentation. I had an opportunity to attend the housing symposium at UCSB, and it was really fascinating, lots of valuable information. So thanks for coming out and sharing some of that with us this evening. I had two questions, and maybe neither of them will be able to be answered. They're kind of crystal ball type questions. And later on, if we get into deliberations, I have some more like rhetorical type responses or questions, and a few questions for staff somewhere in between as well. We talked about Goleta's current housing stock, and I think even more than the South Coast, a high percentage of these are owner-occupied. And clearly, as I'm representative of the aging demographics of the residents, my question to you, Cristobal, who will be able to afford these houses as they transition in ownership over the next 15 to 20 years? Eventually, over the next 15, 20 years, there's going to be a lot of transition in Goleta's housing market based on our demographics. And what's going to happen?
A good question to ask. As far as who is going to be able to afford them, I know I have a house in Stork Ranch, for example, that I've owned and then rent out, and those prices have gone up, they've gone down. But it's still a pretty good salary is needed to afford those, you know, houses in the $500,000-$700,000 range, $800,000, and that's going to be primarily a dual-income family. Because I know the university housing, for example, was in the sixes and sevens, where they just developed their small project there on Marymount Way. So I think it's going to be dual-income, better-paying jobs, that would be able to afford the housing stock, and also those that may want to come in and fix them up. I mean, it may not be a house that's a $1 million house. It may be one that needs repairs and other things that people want to put the time and investment because they're able to get a single-family lot. But I think that's the hope. To say that those houses are going to be going to, like, first-time home buyers, no, that wouldn't be the case. But what you are doing is at least setting a stage to at least part of the need for your workers, and maybe two workers at a time, would be satisfied by transitioning those houses from the empty nesters or retirement community to workers in higher paying jobs.
It seems like a lot of people who originally thought that buying their first home would be the first step towards higher levels of home ownership and more expensive, nicer homes kind of stalled out at the very beginning here in this community. And also right now, if you look at multiple listing services, there's not that much inventory available, but in the next 15 to 20 years, there could be, I don't know if the word is saturation, but a lot more inventory that'll be available. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects supply and demand.
Are you very nicely saying that we're getting older?
I've been saying that a couple of times, yeah. My second question is, and maybe staff can correct me if I've got my facts not right. Conversion of rental units to condominiums in Goleta are permissible if the rental vacancy rate exceeds 5% for three consecutive years. Is this a reasonable approach in your opinion? Right now, obviously, vacancy rates are significantly low, and so right now it doesn't appear that there's any kind of attempt for conversions en masse, but potentially with what Goleta has on the drawing board in terms of additional rental housing, and if three consecutive years of 5% vacancy or more occurred, then there could be a massive exodus of homes from the rental housing stock, which is considered entry-level housing for our workforce, to condominiums, which changes the dynamic.
Well, I think it's a multi-part answer, really. I mean, 5% is not considered abnormal. I mean, in most municipalities, that might be called normal, a 5% rate. I don't see that. Personally, I don't see it as a point that's really a tipping point where you have to take some other action that the economics don't work. Also, and I'll speak for this, let's say if this were a city policy or city of Santa Barbara policy, a lot of the rentals are older stock, and there are, you know, there are conditions where maybe at some point in time it would go up slightly. But then as people get in and rehab them a little bit, I mean, they become much more attractive than the purchase option. And I think what we have to consider is with financing, where do people get the down payments? I mean, maybe it's the home ownership makes more sense on a monthly payment basis than rents as rents go up. But at the same time, that's going to change as interest rates change. And it also requires down payments. So your entry-level workers are not going to have the money to be able to afford those condos. So I don't know. I don't know if I haven't done conversions myself, but I would think rather than converting, I'd rather see a greater supply of a variety of product be available. So as things change over time, as people get older, as incomes get better, as families form, where you do have dual incomes, that you have a variety of product to service people. That would be my my personal impression that I would say.
Thank you. Perhaps in the future, Galita can revisit that 5% threshold to see if it's adequate for what may be happening for us in the future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, please.
It's fascinating. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm interested in hearing more about the thoughts that have been discussed on creating housing that would allow people, as they become seniors and they're in their houses that are 42 years old and need attention and whatnot, what kinds of alternative living situations have been brainstormed or thought about that might allow those people to free up those homes for younger families?
Not an expert in this field, but some anecdotal information that I've seen, there actually are some projects done in L.A. that are, well, this is on a low-income basis, but it wouldn't have to be on low income. It's really seniors who are artists, you know, who have art background, that are creatives. They're instead of the normal, you know, retirement type community, this is one for artists. You know, people have done things. They've been in an entertainment business or whatever, and it's the ability to get together with others of your same interest. Secondly, I think they should be integrated in downtown areas. I would think urban living for seniors is great. I mean, you love to be with the, I don't want to say younger people, but let's say with the creatives in the art areas and be able to associate and really have a lively lifestyle, whether it be with the, you know, connection with university projects or others. And I think it would be something where it should be integrated into the community rather than just a standalone retirement community, because as I don't think I want to go there. I mean, I want to, even though, unless I need to be in certain type facility, I certainly don't want to be into the old folks home, you know. But I think the other one is the ability to retire in place. It also means to make sure that you can utilize this for a long period of time. So handicap accessibility, other features, security that you may have that you start to feel comfortable with, or you have a need as you age. You don't want to move into a place and then have to move out again. So I think design is a big design, communication, community, being near a lot of features, make it exciting to pull you out of your current single-family house and be exciting. Also, that you have people, I think a lot of it would be people of your own interest also. So I say that's probably a big question for the survey, too. Even though we're dealing with employers, what do current, let's say, people that are starting to retire, what are they really looking for? You're asking a great question on what's going to get them to move. And I'm just making guesses anecdotally from what I see. But I think that's a big feature, because if we can get them comfortable in new locations, it's not just single-family houses. I mean, the aging population are also in townhouses and others in the community. If we can get them into another form of housing, that will free up the housing stock. So I think it goes hand in hand with what we're trying to accomplish for workers and should be integrated into the survey. Thank you.
Thanks. I was interested by your limited equity housing cooperative idea, and just anecdotally, you know, evidence from my life, I feel that people my age with families would definitely be interested in something like that, and also interested in better designed homes that may have a smaller footprint but might meet their needs. You know, the standard Goleta suburban sprawl, though these homes are very, very comfortable, in my opinion, probably could be designed a little better. So I guess that's just a quick observation. Sometime, maybe now or another time, I'd love to hear more about what might work for these housing cooperatives. And I'm just making an observation that it's interesting that some of the solutions that I'm hearing bleed out a little bit from housing and a little bit into I'll say social engineering, for the lack of a better term, which I think is really interesting to look at, something about how we build our communities and how we all need social interaction around housing, and I think it's extremely interesting to look at ways to do that better.
Agree. Thank you.
Mr. Campanella, thank you for the really interesting presentation. I just have two points, and I'm sure they're the easiest points to make with respect to the survey and how to get it out to the community. And excuse me, I'm guessing the community that you're speaking of is Goleta, the Goleta proper community. 93117, or does it go beyond that? And perhaps we're just talking about all of South County at this point.
Well, I think it's interesting because you have a different perspective than we do relative to who your let's say your population base is. Mm-hmm. And I know you've got programs going on for economic development. You're working with the university. You've been canvassing things, I think, and you have a lot of information that we may not have. So maybe if you provide some direction from what your experience is in Goleta, we can sort of tailor the survey that we look at all of the South Coast communities and come up with different ways and different approaches to get information.
Well,
on your knowledge,
I'll offer this, and again, I think it's the low-hanging fruit here. But the Monarch Bulletin that comes out from the city of Goleta, and I think that's a monthly bulletin, or maybe every quarterly bulletin, and it's now been renamed Monarch Press. But also, the city of Goleta has an automatic phone service that will call your phone. They call me for updates on things going on in the city. And just incidentally, maybe a month ago, they called and said, you know, be careful around Dos Pueblos, you know, in the morning, in a Saturday morning, because that's where the start was for the triathlon. And they were right. They were right. So those two things I see often, and they're comfortable things to look at, and, you know, they do a world of good, and I think those are some of the vehicles, some of the ways you can get a hold of these people.
Picking up on that a little bit too, one thing we were talking about was, you know, traditionally the surveys have been done either with employers and sometimes with employees, you know, seeing what's going on, but you know, our organization is pretty much medium-sized or larger employers, and there's a lot of jobs out there that are held by people that are working independently. I mean, the millennials are, you know, their office is French Press or something like that, or, you know, Starbucks. I mean, they're working on their computers. They're collaborating and coordinating. How do you get them? And you know, things like Facebook or those type of surveys to try to get not just the traditional employees in, but those are actually working by themselves that are creating their skills, who will subsequently, let's say, be a real valuable part of the workforce. How do we get out there and see what's going to be needed to keep them as well? So I think that's much in line, Brent, with what you spoke about relative to trying to get some type of information. I don't know what Pat called it, Survey Monkey or something like that. There may be something where we can not just get the traditional sources, but also get a broader population that we're trying to retain in the community. I mean, to me, I think the millennials are great. I think they're great kids. They're educated. They want to succeed. And, you know, how do we set the stage that they stick around and they can be successful for us, too, in the communities?
Chair Wallace, thank you. Would you only be focusing on those who are employed for the survey, or would you be interested in talking to people who, maybe some of these folks who are retired in place?
Well, I think I hadn't been thinking about that, about the retired in place, but I think because they add a lot to the community as well, and I think we should see how we could weave that into the survey because they control a lot of the housing stock. So I think it would be silly not to ignore what they're looking for in order to them have them also free up the housing stock for younger people and what their needs are. Because right now, I'm providing anecdotal information. I think it's an excellent point to consider.
And then just another thought about media. The online newspapers, the NewsHawk, EdHat, things of that nature would be a really, I think, an easy way to sort of scoop up survey respondents with a link to your SurveyMonkey survey as well.
Thank you. We got a number of favorable comments back after this, you know, from the people. They gave us appraisals. And there were a lot of favorable comments, like we had 1 through 5 was the rating, and I think we averaged about 4.5 or 4.6 on the variety of things that we did. But one gig was, where's all the young people? You know, there weren't enough young people, you know, as we call at the conference. And there were a couple that were quite, that did present themselves and spoke quite well. But the idea was, how do we get those people involved also? And your idea is a good one, and I think we have to get more of their involvement.
On that, I think that's really critical. A lot of assumptions are made about people my age, yet statistically we've learned that I can look forward to living a lot longer than mm-hmm. before, and that that our group is healthier. So I don't think the concept of warehousing us is quite right. And I say that because we don't have a good idea of what people in my category want. It may be that we would move out of our single-family houses if a certain kind of availability of other product were there for us. I'm not sure we want to be all huddled up, so we might want to think about mixing us in with Meg's age group. And I just think that knowledge about our likes and dislikes is not yet tapped, so I think it's an excellent idea to expand the survey. The other thing is, as we do live longer, as we tend to, almost like a pun, shelter in place, some of our homes become more in need of upgrading before anyone else would choose to live in them, mm-hmm. and that adds to the cost of when properties are turned over. So you might look at some kinds of things that would serve as incentives for the constant upkeep of property, in addition to the market, which rewards. John, you've used the word the phrase affordable housing a lot, and we hear that a lot. And you know, I'll tell you the truth, I am not entirely sure what it means. We have a lot of different markers. One is 30% of your income or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you made mention of trying to attract better paying jobs as part of the mix, and Goleta has been privileged to do that for many, many years. But now, in the economic, what is called our recovery, everywhere we're seeing jobs created and counted that do not match a previous high for overall for our employees. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to step back just a little bit and say, what would it take to make housing affordable to you, and let it be self-defined by those who have the most interest in acquiring it, not overlaying the more academic definitions. Okay? Yep. And then one of the things I'm worried about, I agree with you, attracting higher paying jobs, but I'm very worried that that won't happen with the speed that we need it to happen. And I'm also worried that as we do that, we're still going to have a lot of people who are not in those higher paying jobs. And I want to know what's going to happen to them, what is affordable to them, what type in terms of the product could we make affordable for them. Because, you know, these are our friends that we see every day. We see them as they serve us our coffee, you know, and in many other jobs. And I'm just, as we keep talking, I want to make sure that we're not leaving them behind.
I agree, Chair Wallace. I think, you know, as far as higher paying jobs, one would be to afford the rents. The other one would be single and dual incomes primarily to be able to afford housing product. And by affordable, I guess I should use the word attainable or small A by definition. Rather than subsidized or program type housing.
You know, if the people are much smarter about survey questions than I am, but if you could avoid the term for what would make it the right kind of housing for you at your income level, rather than affordable. I mean, you know, in some ways, affordable housing is simply that which you can afford without regard for what you sacrifice to get it.
Right.
So there has to be a comfort level, and that has to be defined by people in our community.
One follow-up comment. As far as ownership for those that do not have the income, perhaps that the Coastal Housing Partnership, I believe, as you know, is provided through employees' silent seconds, down payment assistance, other type closing cost assistance that helps employees on an ownership basis get the housing. I think also looking at equity co-ops. There's another way to get ownership without having to come up with a very large down payment.
Well, you know, I wasn't thinking exclusively of ownership. I was simply thinking of living opportunities, rental or otherwise.
Right. But perhaps we can get a broader number of people into the that otherwise would not be able to get into ownership. Maybe we can by being creative, but still keep those rentals opportunities open, but at a reasonable rent that people can attain. Yeah, so used to saying affordable. Thank you for the comments.
Bill, do you have some more things to talk about?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wish that I was able to give you some more some constructive criticism on putting together your survey, and if I come up with any ideas or concepts, I'll find out how to get in touch with you and be glad to share that with you, so thanks for that. I did have a couple questions for staff. I think it's a great opportunity for us to kind of revisit the whole housing concept here in Goleta, and thank you for creating the opportunity for us to have this kind of discussion. And I don't know if you have these numbers at your fingertips, so I apologize. But how many additional housing units does Goleta have zoning for compared to what our RH regional housing needs assessment requirement is? Just to kind of set the stage. What is our arena? And I know that was reduced as a result of the last go-round of numbers assigned to us by the state, and it was my understanding that Goleta continues to have excessive zoning for whatever the state is requiring us to provide. And even ballpark would be fine.
Madam Chairman, Commissioner Sheeler, I think what I'd rather do is, while Brian is doing his presentation, rather than putting a number or a range out there that could be woefully wrong, I can grab the housing element very easily and answer that question.
Okay, thank you. I didn't want to create any.
I don't want to have incorrect numbers out there that might haunt all of us.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that as well. And the second question would be to staff, and this probably then requires some more research as well. But this is part of the whole picture, and trying to understand the big picture is how much money does Goleta have that is dedicated for future in lieu housing for low-income projects? I know that money has been contributed over time and is being collected over time, and that I've never seen what that number is, and I'd be interested in knowing what Goleta is starting to stockpile in terms of the ability to provide this in lieu low-income housing in the future. I think that's important as we're also setting the stage. So those are kind of detailed questions, and I understand not having the answers to those at that moment. I don't necessarily need the answer to those. I just wanted to bring those up in the context to show where Goleta stands at this moment with this larger discussion.
If I may make a suggestion, these are really important points that Commissioner Sheeler has raised, and I'm not sure that the information that we have at this moment is entirely up to date, because we've seen some changes just recently, very recently. As to the money, I think there's a question about the set-aside fund for RDA and things like that. So my suggestion would be, don't rush, but this is important information, and I hope that you'll get back to the commission. But this is the kind of information that everybody needs, so we should be disseminating. We have always kept a list, and in fact are kind of required to do so, and I'm sure the list is there. But I would appreciate your taking a look at it to see how current that it is.
Madam Chairman, just today we were in a meeting about an upcoming project and talking about the housing demand generated by the addition to the project. Mm-hmm. And we were discussing that there is a fund. I couldn't even venture to guess. So we could get you that information. Mm-hmm. And then one other thing I wanted to say is tomorrow we can send you the link, the specific link to the study, not just to their website, as well as an email address to send any questions that you might like to have considered in this employee survey. And from what Mr. Campanella has said, it's not like the survey is going out tomorrow. It sounds like it'll be couple few months. So
actually, we're meeting as a board this next week to come
this
up with
this week or next week.
Be next week.
Okay.
To come up with
the questions.
What information do we want? How we go about getting it together?
Okay.
And I this is all very important information for us, and appreciate all the comments.
So if the commissioners got you input by Monday, let's say next week, it would be helpful.
It would, and beside the survey itself, what might be informative is we've got, of the six breakout groups that we did where we looked at possible solutions, we summarized, we have like one-page summaries on each one of those that people contributed in the takeaways. And that might be important also because with limited equity co-ops, there's information on that. Fair housing relative to be able to target, if you will, or try to give preferences to certain workforce. These points are summarized, and they may stimulate some other ideas on your part to get back to us.
So we can coordinate tomorrow.
We'll coordinate tomorrow on that. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation.
This is good, and really appreciate it because I think the real value is creating a product that you're really going to be interested in, and having your input is really going to be helpful to achieve that. So appreciate your time.
Okay. Are there any other comments or questions? Well, John, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
The packaging was excellent. I mean, I think we've heard a lot of this before, but it's always nice to see it in a bundle. And I hope that some of our questions and discussion are helpful to you.
They are, and I look forward to further communication with
you. Right.
Thank you.
So, commissioners and others, we have then until Monday, if we have additional thoughts that we would like to share. Okay.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I apologize for doing this, and it's just this topic is important to me, and I've spent some time thinking about this. So I do have some further comments, not necessarily questions. And, you know, you can listen to what I have to say. And I appreciate you working for solutions because I have questions and really not solutions. So if you'd just indulge me for a moment, let me go through my list here, please. Because I did have an opportunity to read your survey and, like I said, attend the housing symposium, and made me think a lot. The concept that we have 30,000 commuters daily coming from Ventura and from the North County to the South Coast. I'm just wondering how many of these residents and their family members can the South Coast accommodate with additional housing given our resource constraints and the fact that residential does not pay for itself in the long term, especially with Goleta's revenue neutrality with the county. Just one point there. Second point, and you've mentioned this, so I appreciated that. In addition to building additional housing to reduce long distance commuting, how about locating jobs closer to where people live and facilitating or attracting businesses that pay employees more? And in that regard, and this is Goleta specific, we've done some rezoning of manufacturing research park and institutional professional to residential. Loss of these land use opportunities and their concomitant higher paying jobs means that fewer higher paying jobs above the median income will be available compared to lower paying retail and leisure industry jobs. We just had a project that was over 250 new rental housing units in Goleta at 20 units per acre, yet the rents will be up to $1,500 per month. One would have to be above the median income to afford this rental housing. Is there anything that our planning process can do to reduce these kinds of rental costs? Wanted to talk about your survey and the commuting from Ventura and North County, and just a concept, and this is much more simplistic, and there's many details that would be complicated to enable something like this, but the idea that certain employers should consider reducing the long day for commuting employees by 1 hour each day by allowing the first hour of a mass transit commute by a bus or by a van to count as work accomplished. Because employees would have access to Wi-Fi on buses and vans that will allow for work to be accomplished while en route. One of the things the survey said is why people have very much difficulty with this long commute is the loss of time, their inability to go and after work be with their children, coach soccer teams, do community service, things like that. There's ability to restructure people's schedules who are part of these long-distance commutes because they can actually be productive and do work for an hour while they're in commute, which means that's an hour that they gain back, which means they do have the ability to be productive in their communities if they do need to commute. And then I guess the last one that I just wanted to mention is has to do with integration into the community and in-lieu fees that we seem to be collecting with a lot of our residential projects. That may result in lower opportunity costs, but it will also situate lower income housing at the same sites, thus creating economically stratified local communities.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are we all? Okay. Mr. Campanella, thank you very much, and I'm sure that you'll hear from some of us before Monday or on Monday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat, for arranging. Appreciate it.
I think, Commissioners, that we'll take a short break and allow staff to prepare for our next item, transition. We can resume. And that would lead us, Madam Clerk, to item C1, please.
Thank you. C1 is a public hearing, Habitat for Humanity Restore Conditional Use Permit, located at 6860 Cortona Drive, case number 12-156-CUP, APN 073-140-026.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Saley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Commission. This is a conditional use permit that those of you who are on the Commission in March of 2008 would have heard this item. They're moving across the street and down the road a bit, and Brian Highfield, Assistant Planner, will make the presentation. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Pat. Good evening, Madam Chair, Commissioners. I'm back. It's been a while. Good to see you. Happen to have had the privilege of taking this similar CUP for the Restore back in 2008. So this is a good kind of come around for me, and we'll help hopefully help them move to their new, better digs. So I'm looking forward to going through it with you here. So, again, we're bringing for you tonight a request by Habitat for Humanity for you to review a proposed conditional use permit for their Restore use at their proposed location at 6860 Cortona Drive. So, just a bit of a background here, like Pat was saying, back in March of 2008, the Planning Commission approved their current location under a CUP, and it's at 6725 Hollister Avenue in the Cabrillo Business Park currently. A lot of similarities there, same zone district, similar neighborhood. So it leads us then to their proposed location at the Cortona Drive location. That new location is a 2.5 acre parcel. And there are two buildings on the property that total about 30,000 square feet. And again, it is also in the MRP zone district. So real quickly here, an overview, aerial photo here, just to show you a kind of pictorial of their current location and the proposed location to the northwest there on Cortona Drive. Zooming in a bit, this is the site plan for the Cortona Drive property. I've highlighted Suite A in red. That's where they're proposing to locate. The adjacent tenant space is an R&D tenant space of similar size, I believe leased by General Electric at this point. Then the detached warehouse building on the north side of the property is used for storage and by Las Cumbres Observatory currently. One thing I wanted to point out to the commission, the site, as you can see, is well planned out. It circulates nicely, and there's an abundance of parking which, in case you're wondering, I did do the numbers, although they're striking. The worst case demand for the entire property, assuming kind of worst case use, would be a demand of 55 spaces. So they have available to them 143. So quite the dichotomy there. Shouldn't be an issue. But just wanted to point that out. So the project itself, again, they're looking for a very similar type of conditional use permit as they were asking for in 2008. Obviously now we're on Cortona Drive. But what is the restore? Well, the restore is the storage, sale, and reuse of donated excess building materials. So it's a type of limited retail. I wouldn't say it's the kind of retail that you'd find similar to like a hardware store or a grocery store. But it's the type of retail that people go to for a very specific reason. They have very special projects in mind, building projects in mind, and they'll come and see if there are any materials there that they can get for a good price. Oftentimes contractors visit this place looking for a good deal or to drop off excess materials that they've had on a job that they didn't need. But again, it is open to the public. The Habitat for Humanity themselves uses the restore for their own projects around the community where applicable. And, of course, those projects have community benefit in their own right. So briefly, I want to move to some of the analysis that I've done so far. Staff looked at consistency with the general plan first, and then we moved on to zoning ordinance consistency analysis, and then an environmental analysis that I'll get to in a few minutes here. Real briefly, general plan chapter one, right off the bat, it has a core concept in the introduction and overview for the general plan that talks about developing a community vision that seeks sustainability by not sacrificing tomorrow's resources for today's needs. I think just kind of intrinsic in the way that the restore practices and how it functions, its reuse of materials and its diversion of materials from landfills is exactly the kind of environmental stewardship that section of Chapter 1 is talking about. So I thought that was important to pass on. From a use standpoint, it's fairly straightforward. Allowed uses in the general plan land use designation business park, which is similar to MRP in the zoning code, allows for wholesale trade, storage, limited retail, and limited office. So very similar to what is proposed. And I wanted to note that the operations of the restore would be primarily indoors, and they're not proposing additional square footage at this point. With that and its compliance with the land use designation, staff finds the project is consistent with the general plan isn't proposing any additional general plan consistency analysis at this point. So moving on to the zoning ordinance, as I mentioned earlier, it's fairly simple, fairly similar. It's called the MRP designation in the zoning ordinance, and again, permitted uses include storage warehouse, wholesale distributing, and administrative offices. So seemingly a good fit. It may not mention the proposed use specifically, but I think that it's similar enough that we can make that leap. And also the zoning code allows for philanthropic institutions to be permitted or conditionally permitted with the approval of a major CUP. So this is why we're here today. Is that section of the ordinance that allows for that. So That was the consistency analysis that we did for the zoning code, and we find it consistent. So very simple environmental analysis. It's a relatively small project, so the proposed project had only minor interior alterations. So there are a number of categorical CEQA exemptions that apply. They're up on the screen. Existing facilities exemption, new construction or conversion of small structures, and minor alterations in land use limitations. All three of those are applicable there. So in conclusion, that was pretty much the analysis that staff had done. So in conclusion, to wrap it up, staff is thinking is that it's consistent with the general plan, zoning code, and has no possibility of a significant effect on the environment. So staff is recommending that the Planning Commission approve the CUP as outlined in the Planning Commission resolution. So that concludes my presentation. I did want to, I can take questions if there are any, but I did want to make note that John Peterson with Habitat for Humanity is here and can speak during public comments and might be able to add some good information to the discussion when it's appropriate. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heifold. Ms. Saley, this is probably a good time to open the public hearing, so I'll do that. And then we go to Mr. Peterson, please.
Madam Chair and Commissioners, thank you very much. As Brian mentioned, I'm John Peterson. I'm the Director of Operations for Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County. And we are excited to be coming back to you. This has been a much more exciting night than I anticipated because of the last discussion that we had. I was at that symposium as well, and obviously we're very engaged in the discussion of affordable housing or housing for our workforce or however we want to call it. So we're hoping that we can continue in this community and to be a sustainable organization that can provide housing through our Habitat, through our new construction and repair programs. But why we're here today is to request a conditional use permit for our Restore, which we have been operating since 2008 over at 6725 Hollister Avenue. Many of our shoppers are from Goleta. Perhaps some of you have even shopped there yourselves and maybe even donated. And as Brian said, this is the idea behind this is that we want to be sustainable. You know, we build homes off of donations, and the Restore is a great way for us to take donations of excess materials and save them from landfills. We've diverted over 800 tons of material that would have gone to landfills that has been used in other homes around the community or in our projects. So we offer those items for sale to the public for 50 to 80% less than retail. Many of our shoppers are contractors who are looking for keeping their bids down and keeping them working. Some are individuals doing their own work. And from a sustainability standpoint, in our current space, the Restore has already covered 80% of our administrative costs. It allows us to keep our donations going right to our home building, and that's really the goal of it. And with this new space, we think it's a little bit larger sales floor, a little bit nicer offices, a little more well-appointed. So we're excited to see the growth that could continue in this community with this approval. As you might know, I just wanted to note that we had some very favorable support from the City Council on November 20th, where they waived a portion of our application fee. And so we appreciate that support in helping us stay here in Goleta and move smoothly to this transition to a new space. And so that can be a tough transition time, so we appreciate that. So with that, you know, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I thank you for hearing this, and hopefully we'll have your support with this conditional use permit.
Mr. Peterson, if you're, the CUP is approved and all, do you have a time that you're expecting to make the move?
Yeah, we're just in the final phases. We haven't signed the lease this was a condition of the lease was to get the CUP. But we'll sign it in the next week if we get the approval, and plan to start moving in February, and then we would be open by May.
Okay, thank you. Other questions?
Yeah, Mr. Peterson, thank you so much. I think you're a tremendous asset to our community. I'm very glad that you're located here in Goleta. In terms of square footage, how much are you gaining in this move?
Yeah, we've grown in the space we're in as we've been able to acquire more space. So the overall square footage is not a huge increase from about 11,000 to just over 12,000. But our sales floor has been really chopped up. If you've been to our space, we have several different warehouses mm-hmm. with different entrances. And we had some significant portion of space for our own storage, for our construction materials. So we're going from just under 8,000 to closer to 10,000 square feet of sales floor. And we think with the space and the design of the space, we'll be able to show our product much better and get a lot more out of the space.
Kind of a very tangential question, but I'm just wondering, do you allow students to do community service to earn their community service credits coming and working for you?
Yeah, absolutely. We live off of volunteers on our construction sites and in our restores and in our office, so we absolutely do. The one thing we run into is we're not allowed to have students under 16, so we get a lot of college students. We actually also get some community service through the courts, and so we have lots of folks working in our restore and volunteering. So
great.
Anyone's welcome.
Thank you.
Please.
Mr. Peterson, you know, clearly this is a benefit to the community, so I won't go any further that way. I am curious, though, how many restores are there out there? What's the magnitude of this?
There's just over 400 restores in the U.S.
Wow.
Of the 1,800 or so affiliates, Habitat for Humanity affiliates in the U.S. So the restore started in Dallas, and it is spread all across the country. So.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned, I can't remember the number, but was it like 80 million tons?
800 tons.
800
tons. That's for our affiliate, not for all of them.
What did I say?
80 million.
Oh, no. That was clearly wrong. All right. So I just wanted to think about that from a cumulative standpoint on the 400-plus stores.
Yeah.
That's mind-boggling.
And you know, we're very proud that our sales per square foot, even now, are very high amongst those, but there are a lot of restores with much larger spaces. Riverside has 30,000 square feet mm-hmm. and, you know, these big warehouses. So there are a lot of affiliates who are keeping even more out. So I think we're on the low side in terms of amount that we're diverting from the landfills. So that number is exponentially more.
Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Commissioner Sheeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, one question for you. Talking about 80 tons of excess construction materials, if those materials didn't get to the restore, they've been going up to the Tahiguas dump. There hasn't been any other location or any other ability to reuse these materials without restore being involved in the process?
I'm sure there's some, but there, you know, I mean, there's Art for Scrap, or there's some other folk who have tried something similar. But as far as I know, we're pretty much the largest for the construction material mm-hmm. for windows and doors and toilets and things like that. I know there's another one in Santa Barbara now. They're trying to do a little higher end stuff, more like unique faucets and things like that. But for the wide construction items, I think we're one of the few in town in the area.
So there's a legitimate need and ability to reuse those materials. It's just how do those get
right.
a new home?
Absolutely. And we have benefited because people are taking things out of homes in this area that have not even come close to their life, you know. There's definitely a way to reuse those.
They're talking about, in order to reduce the impacts at Tahiguas, talking about a materials recovery facility mm-hmm. that would either be located at Tahiguas or perhaps down in Lower Santa Barbara. Would those kinds of materials be something that they would be pulling out and along the production line as well, so that that doesn't end up going into the landfill at the new materials recovery facility, wherever that would be?
Yeah, we have a great relationship with Marburg. We work closely with them on our construction as well as at the restore, and we definitely have gotten some shipments from them and would definitely want to be a part of that that line of keeping stuff out of the landfill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as part of our solid waste, the city's solid waste contract, there's really a growing movement to get early separation of reusables, and we do that. It's kind of hard on construction sites, but Marburg and others are really, I think they're doing a much better job on that now. So I'm glad you're getting some of that benefit.
Yeah.
All right.
Madam Chairman, I just want to add one thing. When we were before the council on the fee waiver last month, now retired council member Connell mentioned that her granddaughter, they were redoing her bedroom and she really wanted a porthole window, and they found one at the restore.
Well, all right. You know how competitive Margaret and I are. I'm not much of a shopper, but I get great presents for my wardrobe. So, you know. Anyway, I shop Restore, and I have to limit myself because I go there with one project in mind. I like working with wood. And I go with one project in mind, and I typically find something that will help me with that. But I really have to limit myself until the next time, or I'll have 10 projects all lined up. It's a great, and the idea, I think it makes us all feel good to do this kind of, it's, you know, even before recycling, this concept of reuse. And, you know, I think some of the quality of the older products, particularly the, I work in woods, I think it's just remarkable, and there's no way you can run out to a Home Depot or something like that and pick something up. And many times, not a lot of restoration work is necessary. You have some very nicely cared for items in there.
Yeah.
But you won't see me that frequently for a while. Okay. Mr. Peterson, do you have a question?
No,
Mr. Peterson, thank you, I think.
Thank you.
Okay. So we'll bring it back now to the commission. Staff, do you have anything further to add? All right. You know, I have one question, and I admit right away that it's more theoretical than anything real. However, the lease has not yet been signed. I's have not been dotted, nor the T's crossed. So I want to know what happens to this major CUP, which we're told is rather explicit to this operation. What happens to it if something unfortunate comes up so that Restore does not move?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, the way that the conditions of approval are listed for the CUP, it's a non-transferable CUP. So essentially, if Habitat for Humanity is unable to operate the store, it becomes a non-transferable CUP, and it becomes a bit of a meaningless permit for them at that point, and it can't be given away to some other group. We'd have to come back through the process.
That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you very much. All right.
Chair. Mm-hmm. I did have a couple questions of staff.
Please.
Thank you. Mr. Highfield, I don't understand conditional use permits as well as I should, particularly the differential between a major and a minor. For the cost of a major CUP, I guess this is being waived as a, this is a...
Madam Chair, Commissioners, yes, the council had waived half of it.
Okay.
Processing fees.
For a normal CUP, is the full cost recovery, is it just for staff time associated with the processing of it, or is there additional costs associated with a CUP?
Usually it's just staff time. If there are consultants that work on the case, then they would bill their time as well.
Okay.
But usually in a case like this, it would just be staff time.
Okay. And then regarding the manufacturing research park zoning and the finding that this is a compatible use but still needs a major CUP, will a proposed use like this be an allowable use as we develop our new zoning code, or will uses like this continue to have a major CUP?
Let's hear the answer.
Madam Chairman, Commissioner Sheeler, it's fairly typical in zoning ordinances that nonprofits, there's a catch-all, a uses like churches, for example, but allowed with a conditional use permit in any zone. That's a very common catch-all phrase in virtually all ordinances. So it's conceivable this specific use may end up being allowed in that zone, and if, but I don't think we can venture to guess, although I think it's fairly safe to say some sort of catch-all for nonprofit uses is likely to be in there.
All right. Any other questions for staff? Okay. Then I think I'll go ahead and close the public hearing. Is that correct, Ms. Sterling?
Yes.
Okay, we'll do that. And then we'll have discussion and see if we can have a motion. Is there discussion from the commission? Or are you ready for motioning?
I would be happy to make a motion.
All right, let's hear it.
I move that we adopt Planning Commission Resolution 12, next in line, entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta Approving the Habitat for Humanity Major Conditional Use Permit at 6860 Cortona Drive, case number 12-156-CUP, APN 073140026.
Thank you. Is there a second, please?
I'd be happy to second that.
All right. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Madam Clerk, that's unanimous, 5-0. All right, well, hurry up and get back into operation across the street. All right.
I'm going to throw a little party.
Oh, yeah, there'll be plenty of advertising. We'll send you to know yourself.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll still be open for operation up until a few weeks between, so thank you.
All right. So, Ms. Salik, what kind of action do we need to take on C2 motion? Or?
Madam Chairman, I think what would be appropriate is to have the clerk read the item into the record and then have a motion and a second
right.
to continue to January 7th. Thank you.
Madam Clerk, please. C2.
Item C2 is the public hearing Willow Springs 2 revision of conditions of approval for vesting tentative map 08-128 VTM and development plan 08-128 DP, case number 12-168 DP, RV and TMRV, APNs 073-060044-2048.
Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion to continue this item to Monday, January 7, 2013.
A second, please.
I'll second that.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That, too, is unanimous, Madam Clerk.
Aye.
I was just reading your mind, wasn't I? Sorry. I'm sorry about that. Aw. All right, let's move on. The next item is the director's report, Ms. Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I mentioned earlier, January 7th, we'll have the Willow Springs 2 project that you just continued to that date. We also have a second agenda item, a development plan amendment. And on the 28th, thus far, we have three items, one of which is a discussion about the upcoming new zoning code and what that process will be. We'll be discussing that with the council on January 15th. And we'd like to have a similar discussion.
I'm sorry, what
with
was
you.
The date?
January 28th.
28th for us. And that will be following discussion at council?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the only other item in the director's report is just to let you know that the city offices, as is typically the case, will be closed for, it's a total of 7 business days. So Monday the 24th, the office will be closed, obviously, Christmas Day and the rest of that week, and then Monday and Tuesday the following week, so reopening on Wednesday, January 2nd.
Okay, thank you. I think we can move to Planning Commission comments. Commissioner
got,
West.
Thank you. I've got a comment. Prepared something this evening. I have a few words to say about zoning, so I was very glad to hear that that's going to be on our agenda, overjoyed, in fact, because it's always been sort of an interest of mine. And now that I've been 2 years into my appointment, halfway through, I wanted to share a few things with the commission and the community that I hope are of interest to you. Goleta has yet to decide how best to refine our zoning codes to fit our aspirations as a city. The city staff is going to put this on as a future agenda item, and I think it's very timely on the heels of Measure G that we take a look again at Goleta's zoning. Looking back, some of the development in 2012 created this type of paradigm. There were attempts to change agricultural land designation to residential, something that many residents feared would spread suburban sprawl. Now, because of Measure G, the paradigm has shifted, and we are faced with this question. How can we preserve Goleta's agricultural character, promote sustainable farming, improve quality of life, and encourage small businesses that enhance our community, not just in the high-tech research and development nodes in the center of Goleta, but also on the land on the edges, where agricultural innovation, such as dryland farming and low-impact development, could be part of a sustainable development research ordinance that could create jobs and income as well as protect open space. So I feel these are important questions that hold merit and are worth our time. And because of that, I'm going to be meeting with our new planning director to share with her some of my own interest in that and some of the research that I've done on those subjects. So I'll just share that with you all.
Well, thank you. Other comments? Okay. I think that brings us to the end of our meeting. But before we adjourn, I'd like to say that I hope everyone has a very healthy, happy, and safe holiday season. And I'm talking to our vast television audience as well as my colleagues and staff and everyone here. And I'm sure that we'll all come back refreshed and ready for work next year. So
sounds like so far away.
Well, that's a plan, huh? Okay. Shall we have a motion for adjournment, please?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
I will second that.
Thank you. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Madam Clerk, you can count that one. Thank you very much. Good night to everyone.